Yeah, the Building Better Humans Project podcast. Welcome. Be motivated and be inspired. Let's go.
G'day team, Glenn Azar here, welcoming you back to the Building Better Humans Project podcast. This is part two of the Jaden Nicorima story. Young football player on a very big contract who made some bad decisions and paid a very big price, a price that affected him and affected his family. And now we're going to talk about the redemption, the road back to the NRL, the road back to inspiring other young athletes, the road back to explaining to people that they can recover from bad decisions if they surround themselves with the right people, the right systems, the right processes, and most of all, if they're willing to do the work. Jaden is certainly willing to do that. So welcome back to part two of the Jaden Nicorima story.
Yeah, the Building Better Humans Project podcast. Let's go.
From that period, the next year or two, what's that about for you?
So the next year or so, I wasn't allowed to play. I was on like a 12-match ban. And then obviously wasn't allowed to play footy, wasn't allowed to train with anyone until then.
Not even QRL teams or anyone?
Not even QRL teams. And because me and one of the boys from Wong tried to lie on that stat deck, it came, or he pressed charges and came out and said that he didn't lie on the stat deck and that I was the only one that lied.
Right. So to give people who are listening that, so you tried to, you asked someone if they would say they spiked something of yours. So you were trying to get away with it that way, which at 21 probably makes sense to you.
Yep.
Or and at then, 20.
Yeah, he came out and said that he didn't spike me, that he didn't, that he lied on the stat deck saying that he didn't do it and that I did it. So then that ended up going to the high courts after everything's all done.
Yeah, right.
So I've just, just lost my contract. And then now I've got to go to court for something that I've already been, like, tarnished for.
Yeah.
So then, I hit rock bottom then.
Former NRL player Jaden Nicorima has avoided jail for bribing a teammate to sign a statutory declaration claiming he spiked his drink during Mad Monday celebrations.
So what's rock bottom look like at 21 years of age?
Just suicide thoughts.
Yeah.
Honestly, going deep into that.
More drugs, more alcohol?
More drugs, more alcohol. Man, I was drinking like every weekend, even during the week, like weekdays and stuff.
Yeah.
I would just, drink. I wasn't allowed to play for 2 years.
Did you think you'd never play again?
2 years, but that whole thing dragged on for like 2 years and you don't know whether you're going to jail or not, so...
Because lying on the stat deck's a thing that could get you to jail, right?
And you're looking up on Google and stuff, and they're like, oh, yeah, you can go to jail for 5 years minimum. And I was just like, oh, I'm not going to jail.
Yeah.
There's no way. I'd rather be dead than go to jail. Yeah, you sort of take... start taking drugs and drinking alcohol and just thinking to yourself, oh, like, if I'm going to go to jail, if I'm going to die, I might as well have all my fun now while I can and then just... just do it or...
And are you talking to anyone through this phase?
No.
So, Cal, did he talk much, through all that period about what he was going through? Or is that sort of stuff that you guys have found out later?
Father and son? No. No, because I think he realised that he failed me. I think he spoke more to his brothers and to Deb. But father and son, no. And I can understand that because in my job at the time, I was dealing with young men. And when I compare them, Jaden was going on the same pathway as the young men that I was looking after. But it's something that even in my culture, we probably don't talk about because men are very headstrong. And it's just slowly getting out there now with all these wealthy officers at the clubs and all that. But it's something that as fathers, we probably need to be more of a role model as the kids get older. But in saying that, it takes two of you.
I must admit, I did go from being, and Cal will know this, very caring, to I was very, very angry. very angry. I was very angry towards the Roosters of how they handled the situation. And I don't know if Jaden said this, but basically if it wasn't for Izzy, like slapping me in the head with words, saying, "Mum, just get him home, stuff the contract and stuff the money, because if we don't get him back, he'll be in a box."
And I used to jump from like group to group, just so like people wouldn't be able to.
Is there a sense of freedom in the fact that I can do drugs now, whilst it's illegal, but I can do drugs and alcohol now, and I'm not responsible to the NRL or anyone?
Yeah.
Because let's be honest, most jobs aren't getting drug tested.
Yeah. And I just felt like a normal person. I wasn't working at the time as well. And then, yeah, deep into my pretty dark days or my lowest point, I got done drink driving.
Right.
So lost my license for like 8 months.
I have a thing, and I still do now, for my boys, that if they go out, I text them the next morning and I say, "Are you alive?" And I still do it for Cody if he went out in Brisbane. If they haven't responded by 10 or 11, I ring them. And I couldn't hear from Jaden. I said to Harlem, "Have you heard from Jaden?" "No." "Izzy, do you know where Jaden is?" I'll see if I can see his last snap. And then Harlem said, "Oh, Mum, there's a snap of Jaden sitting in the watch house." And I said, "What do you mean in the watch house?" "What?" So I messaged Joe Offengowie's brother and said, "Do you know where Jaden is?" And he goes, "Oh, Mum, I'll get him to ring you." And then he rang me. He said, "Mum, I got done drink driving." And I was like, "What? What do you mean?" And he goes, "I'll talk to you soon when I'm allowed to come home." And I said, "Okay." So, you know, that story came out, I was livid, banging my head against the wall again, because that's something Kelly and I wouldn't do. Like, what the hell, Jaden? What are you doing, man? Like, this is just not on. And then he explained the situation, and I said, "Okay, we'll get you a lawyer." Isaac got involved. So then he asked me if I'd go to court with him. And I was like, "Oh, God, okay. Where do we have to go?" And he said, "Ipswich." So, of course, I'm in the police, and friends of friends said, "Deb, you know it's full of bogans and you're going to get seen." I said, no, we'll be all right. Sure enough, we got seen.
I was walking out of the Ipswich court, which, like, there would have been no one at Ipswich. Like, no one would have known.
Yeah.
And there was, like, a reporter there.
Yeah, right.
And he was, like, taking photos of his, on his phone and recorded me, and it ended up being in the papers everywhere. And, yeah, I tried to hide that too from my parents. Came out in the papers when they were out in Townsville. And then I just rung them, said that this was it, why I'm not allowed to play footy at the time, because I think I was still
violent. So that still extended your ban, did it?
Yeah, it extended right. My ban a little bit. I think it was like 4 weeks at the time, but the court case was still going on past that, so
yeah.
I knew I wasn't playing footy for that whole year.
So you're not reaching out to anyone?
No.
You're not speaking to psychs, you're not counsellors, no friends?
I remember NRL was, I got told that I wasn't allowed to play footy until I better myself or do like programs to help myself. So I ended up seeing a guy called Phil Johnsey. He's like a psychologist. He's done a bit of work with.
He used to be at the Broncos. Bronx, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Done a little bit of stuff with him, but at the time, like, I didn't care about it. I was just
ready to
try and get back into footy, hopefully, because at the time, I just thought that's what everyone wanted me to do.
Yeah, wanted you to play footy again.
Yeah, wanted me to play footy again, but thinking back on it now, like, I didn't want to be there.
So when I met you, obviously we did a camp together, and you messaged me a couple of days later and said that you had pretty much decided to give up footy. So you were still at that. Through all of this, even pre-getting caught, footy kind of was almost a burden.
Yeah.
And now you've got this massive hunger for it again.
Yeah.
So we'll fast forward to that in a moment. But so you get back in, you get a message, I think it's a day after Australia Day, by the Dolphins to say you've been cleared so you can go back to Redcliffe. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. And you're still not that into footy at this point in time, but you go back.
Yeah, no, you sort of do. I was just doing it because, like, obviously going up, you're naturally good at it. So it's there on the side.
And that's your identity. And that's how, and again, that's what everyone else expects you to do. Yeah. So I'll go back one step through all of this. Did you talk to Cody at all once he found out? Because, again, he's still playing NRL. He's at the Bronx, or has he gone to the Warriors by then?
He would have still met at Brisbane then. Can't really remember the conversation. We would have had some sort of conversation.
Because I imagine he would have...
Yeah, reached out and...
But he also would have copped a lot of, the backroom conversations and rumours and whatever, even before you spoke to him, because things like that spread pretty quick.
He sort of keeps himself a little bit too, Codes. Like any negative stuff that would have been said about me, he wouldn't have told me about. He would have just kept them to himself, just because he knows at the time it would have hurt me.
Yeah.
So he probably would have just watched me from afar, seeing how I was reacting, but...
Your younger brothers, how'd they react? I can't
pinpoint a conversation with Cody, but Izzy, the one under me, he's like the most passionate brother. Any footy game we get into, like, he's messaging us at halftime and stuff, even though we can't check our phones.
Yeah, right.
So he took it hard, just, absolutely gone off. Like, he's got anger issues, but he was messaging me saying, you're effing this and effing that.
Yeah, right.
Like, pull your head in, like, what are you doing? Whatnot. And that's just how he shows he cares. And that hurt. But then, back to my darkest days. Had a chat with my little brother, Harlem, who...
So how old would Harlem have been then?
Maybe
17?
Like, 17, 18.
Right.
And I don't know. We were just lying on his bed. And I'm not too sure how the conversation started. But he it went somewhere along the lines of some, like, have you ever thought about doing bad things to yourself? And I was like, yeah, I have. Like, I've actually thought about killing myself. And he just looked at me and then went purple. And he goes, what? It, like, didn't click for him. And then I explained to him, like, bro, I cry myself to sleep. Like, sometimes I just want to get in the car and, like, drive it off a bridge or drive it into a pole and, like, just die. Overdose, like, do drugs. Like, something just to kill myself. And he just went purple and then just goes, bro, I can't lose you.
I didn't realise that it had... I knew it was a huge hit for him. I definitely didn't realise that Harlem had reached out to him. Like, that... Yeah, that was... heart-wrenching.
As I said to Jaden, it was good to know that he made the effort of reaching out, and the family unit and the boys were there to look after him. And because a lot of young men don't reach out. And it was actually Harlem reaching out to him saying, are you okay? And he initially said, yeah, I was fine, bro. But then Harlem didn't just let it sit there, which is, for a young man, like, I think Harlem was 17 or 18 at the time. That's pretty impressive to still see that, no, there's something not quite right, and ask that question again.
Yeah, Harlem's very unique. And, even a couple of weeks ago, it's quite funny, he walked in the bedroom and said to Jaden, bro, do you realise what you put us through? Like, do you like the change of what we see now? Jaden was like, yep. And he goes, but do you realise what we could see? And he goes, oh, what do you mean? And he said, what we could see of you hurting yourself, but not only hurting yourself, hurting us. And he said, I can now. He said, that's what we were trying to tell you, Jaden, but you just didn't want to listen. So, like, this I said to Harlem, for you to say what you did and to keep at him, and he just said, I just knew he wasn't right, Mum. I could just see it.
And then even after that, like, nothing still really clicked for me until after the camp we had here.
Did you ever talk to your parents about those darkest days?
No. Nah. I spoke to Mum a little bit. In the last, 6 months. But, yeah. Nah.
So that's interesting. So nothing really clicked until we did that camp in December.
Yeah.
Which, I'm going to take no credit for that, because I think things click for us when they're meant to.
Yeah.
And I could have presented that same camp to you a year before and you wouldn't have been ready.
Yeah.
Because you still would have been in whatever, like, what frame of mind. So it obviously came along at the right time for you. And it's interesting, we look at, like, I saw your name, obviously, because they sent me the list of the names, and I,
look into everyone a little bit because I'm going to do a 24-hour camp or an 18-hour camp with you. And obviously I knew your name mostly because of Cody, to be honest, because I don't really follow the NRL heavily, but I do like the Bronx. And so I just Googled you and it brought up, and I told you this, it brought up only the bad stuff. And yet I know you and you're not a bad kid.
Yeah.
And so, and you're the same age as Alyssa, my daughter. Like you guys are literally 4 weeks apart. And so as a dad, I think you can make one mistake and the world will make you believe that that's you. So had you have, to be honest, had you have driven yourself into a power pole or whatever or done had an overdose, people would have said, well, he was always going to do that because he was kind of a bad egg. That's where he was going. And you're not.
Yeah.
You just made one or two bad mistakes and then you kind of thought there was no road out. So this becomes your road out.
When I look back, I ask myself this question, Glenn, you know, is it a learning cue for Jaden? Or was it the biggest mistake? And I look back and it was a big mistake on his behalf. I don't blame the Roosters. I blame Jaden for doing those dumb things. I don't blame his mates. But I just hope Jaden learns from the mistake and he doesn't make that same mistake again.
Yeah, funny story. Even before you camp, like this is how I know my head wasn't there. I had a whole half a tub of ice cream before I come to this camp just because I didn't care. I honestly didn't care. And you were saying I was sitting in the back of the room just trying to analyze things and
throwing a lot of humor, a lot of sort of cockiness, bit of attitude towards us.
Yeah, yeah.
And not, I don't mean in a bad way, but kind of that was your defensive mechanism to. And I do analyse where people sit. And, you know, obviously, Casa, Michael Casablanca, is a good mate of mine and a good supporter of the club and yourself. And, you know, because I messaged him and asked him about it, and he said he's a really good kid. He's a bit lost at the moment.
Yeah.
So, because, you know, I wanted to know a bit about you because I was sensing that attitude. So this was through the night. I said, mate, what's this Jaden Nikarima kid like? He said, mate, he's a great kid. He's just a bit lost at the moment and he needs something like this. So I thought, okay, so then I was aware of that.
Yeah.
You know, like you give me a bit of stick through the night, but not in a bad way, and right up until that last ski erg challenge.
Yeah.
But then maybe 2 days later you reached out to me and said that you'd like to at least talk. And, you know, I'm very blunt and very honest. So we met day one and I was really honest with you. If you're not into this, neither am I, so don't waste my time or yours. But look at where we are now. You're in here with Zaire and Brody. You guys are putting yourselves through crazy challenges. The amount of people that have talked about the change in you in the last, well, it's not even 6 months really, but yeah, I'm pretty proud of that. Even family members of yours saying how much you've changed.
Pretty obvious, especially with everyone that knows him. You know, he's changed immensely. You can see that, you know, through his Instagram. Used to be all partying and jumping on tables and whatnot, but yeah, he's definitely changed a lot now, trying to inspire young people, even people who I guess have been in his shoes before. So you know, I'm proud of him that, and I think I can just hear it in his voice alone. Just the growing up, so Jaden was a you know, he used to kick to himself, soft, kind hearted type of kid, and he never really showed emotion, never really came out. And so when I compare his first podcast with yourself and then the recent one when he opened up, it almost felt like he had this all bottled up for what, the last 2 years, and then he finally got to let it all out. And he's changed so much, and for him to do that, especially because I've obviously known, well, he's my brother and I know how he is, it actually made me feel better for him. And obviously, he actually inspired me about myself this trip, wanting to, you know, open up and train hard. And he's always got the saying about being beast mode. So, you know, when I'm running now, I think of it. So he's definitely inspired me a little bit too.
And it's just inspiring to watch.
Yeah, he sent me a message last night. He sent me a message of Deb on the couch reading Alyssa's book. But then also sent me a message saying it's so cool how many mums have reached out to him as a young, as a 23-year-old bloke, and thanking him for what he's doing for their kids. So he's definitely on a different path, but it's what I like is it's not all about him. which is easy to get wrapped up and make it all about you when you're a young up-and-coming star and earning good money. But he's so well grounded now that he's realised it's not about him.
Oh, yeah. Like I said to Jaden, you know, all those mistakes that you did in the past, you should leave it. Leave it and just keep going forward. Because the time you look back at it, you know, you don't want to take that backward step.
It's easy to look back and think you are the mistake, as opposed to that it was just an action. It was a mistake, but that doesn't mean you are that person. You can change who you are, particularly at their ages, like they're kids, and they've got so much life ahead of them. But he certainly went through a phase where he thought that he wasn't a good person. Well, he wasn't a good person for a period of time. He was making questionable decisions. But now that he's past that, you can change who you are.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
I remember at the start when I was starting to form into the person I am at the moment, was people were messaging me, asking me if I was all right. I remember my manager, Isaac, reached out to me just asking if I was all right, asked me a few questions, forgot the weather, and he goes, "Oh, no, you're going good, mate, keep it up." And at the time, I was like, what are you talking
about?
Am I doing something wrong?
Yeah.
Well,
in a way, you're used to doing something wrong as far as that's how you've been tasked. And I think now, so I spoke to you and initially you didn't want to do podcasts, you didn't want to do anything. And what I did say to you, and not for me to have content on my podcast, but more is control your own narrative. Like, you know who you actually are. And I think now, instead of just being tagged as that larrikin sort of young bloke who's a bit hard to control, all of a sudden people have this different conversation because they're hearing from you directly. Like, I'm experiencing it. You know, you are a beast. That's how you've become, and you're 23. Yeah. So now you'll have a better appreciation for the NRL. You've already got a passion for helping kids, hopefully not going through the same thing. So you're working with the Image Academy, you and Cam Cullen. So there's so many more benefits of this. But let's go down two roads. You make it back into the NRL, which you and I both believe you will, because you've got the skill, but now you've got the mentality behind being a great player. What's that going to look and feel like for you, do you think? What's going to be different this time around?
That debut is going to feel so much better. But just appreciate everything. Obviously, money. Just the little things like physio. I've got to pay for my own physio, like appreciating that, getting all the boots and whatnot that come with it. But even as little as like staying in the moment, after every training session, I remember there was like heaps of little kids around. You'd go say hello to them and sign them stuff, and they loved it. But looking back on the outside in, like if you spent a solid 5 minutes with them, like it would make their day. Like it makes their day all the time.
And I've seen you do that at the Dolphins, kids crowd around you, and you give a lot of your time, which is interesting because a lot of athletes don't do that. So that's
definitely something that I've learned. Being away from the game, because I remember doing like academy stuff and whatnot, and heaps of kids always ask like, do I know this person? I'm like, yeah, like they're my good mates. And then
can you visualize, like, can you put yourself into this mindset? And you and I have not talked about this, but it's something that I think you should do as regularly as possible. Visualize and actually feel walking onto the field the first time. So say we're at the Bronx, and it's a big game. So the Bronx are regularly doing 30 to 50,000 people at games compared to most NRL clubs. Can you imagine the first time you actually get to walk out onto that field with 30,000 people screaming?
I actually have pictured it, and my mum's at the top or the bottom before I run out, giving me a big hug and kiss.
If there's a kid in my family, if he says that he's going to do something, he will do it. And his goal is to get back in the NRL, and he will get there.
If he made it back, it would be ideal to obviously play together. That's been our dream, you know, since I think we were in the 20s. We played 20s together. We made a grand final. Didn't get the chocolates, but since then, we wanted to stay together. He obviously moved for a better opportunity to go to the Roosters. But obviously, you know, threw that away. So, you know, it would be ideal to play with him. But I guess just to see him back in the NRL system, I'd be pretty happy.
Everything that you visualise since we've been working together has happened.
Yeah. Has.
And I haven't, like, you once told me that you had visualized doing a podcast, and then we started the Bro Chat podcast.
Yeah.
And then I bought Bro Chat coffee mugs, and then you said, this is literally what I visualized.
Yeah.
It's funny how that happens.
I'm a big believer, like, if you visualize things enough, and it sort of pushes you in the right stead to get it and to want it. So
you get back in, you get to be, I think, most likely a better player than you had the potential of being anyway, because even if you had not been picked up, and you probably wouldn't have gone down a good road, but you still would have been a good player.
Yep.
Like, you're better than an average NRL player, with no disrespect to anyone, you just are. So now you've got the mentality to go with it. What does that give you the ability to do going forward? Like, how can you use your name for better? You know, like, yeah, now it's easy because you're at the Dolphins and you've got time. But what about when you're an NRL player and you're under the pump and there's a high expectation on you? You're going to have all the backslappers will turn up again, because that happens. You see it in every sport. But when you're losing or when you're down and out, you don't see it.
Yeah.
So how have you thought about how you combat all that and how you can still give back to kids, how you can use your name?
Not really thought about that far, but I guess in regards to helping kids, I've sort of, when I do get back into the NRL, I've got a voice now. Like, I've been at rock bottom, I've lost it all, and now I've come back and I can show young kids that it's never too late. Obviously, I don't want them to be in the position that I once was, but if I can teach kids or go around, I'd love to go around to schools just to tell my story, and just to spread the message to kids that, like, take ownership of your own actions.
Yeah.
It's something that I didn't do for, I reckon, a good 3 to 5 years of my life, and it tarnished me.
I think the learning you can take from Jaden is that, you know, when you do go down the wrong path, you can change. It may not change dramatically. You may not change dramatically, so it might take you, 2 years or so on. But I think, from what I've learned from Jaden, especially because he's always been the party animal, or the one that if there's a party, he's there. He's the party. So the fact that he can change, and I've seen all the changes from him, I think really should help inspire other young kids who are like Jaden.
Yeah, so teaching young kids to have ownership over themselves, and if anything, that's all I try to teach everyone, including all you boys I'm working with, is only focus on the things that are inside your control. So 15, 16-year-old kids, one, who think either they won't go through this, well, now we know that you can, or two, that think they're good enough at footy that it'll get overlooked. Well, it won't, because everything catches up with everyone eventually.
Yeah.
So whatever happens, don't try and blame someone else. You've got to own that stuff.
And as we've heard, like, I had the best childhood growing up, the best parents, so one would think that my story would never have happened to me, but it did. You can get lost in the crowd and stuck in the trap quite easily, so yeah, just if you do take ownership of it early and move forward with it.
So you and I both believe wholeheartedly you can make it back into the NRL. Like, that's not in doubt to us. But let's play devil's advocate. If for some reason that doesn't happen, injury, whatever else could potentially stop that, what do you do going forward then? How do you still make an impact and still not regret what you threw away a couple of years ago?
I still want to work with kids, and I've got the best mindset I've ever had. I'm around awesome people in different fields of life that can help shape young kids into beasts. I want to build a program or do something in regards to helping young kids build their programs, be grateful for the little things, and just, appreciate what they have.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, it's about building people into better people. So my goal always with you is to make you a better person, not a better footy player. Like, I don't know enough about football to teach you anything. I do enjoy it. Like, I come and watch the Dolphins game, and then watched when the Bronx and I think it was the Titans played, and just to watch the speed difference between even those two levels was quite amazing. So I get what you were talking about back when you first went down there. But again, I only care about all of you guys as blokes, as individuals, more so than, of course, I enjoy watching you win as a footy team. I'd love to see you back in the NRL because I feel like you've done your penance and you've probably, I don't know, challenged yourself in a way that even the penalty or penalised yourself in a way that even the NRL didn't, just by how you felt about things. And now we've come out the other side of that. I don't think you'll ever turn that off. This is who you'll be going forward forever.
Yeah, definitely. And before I started, you said that NRL is just a bonus, like we're here to build you into a better human. And although I'm not where I want to be yet,
you never will be, yeah. Just so you know.
Yeah.
I'm 48 soon. I'm nearly 50, and I don't think I'll ever stop learning, ever stop reading. Like I'm starting a full-time psychology degree soon on top of everything else I've done because I don't want to stop. So, you know, I don't think it's something that ever ends. I think you've got to keep growing. Biggest regret out of all of this, what's that been for you out of this whole experience so far? It's going to end positive, but what's the biggest regret?
Oh, hurting my parents. Yeah. Definitely, yeah. Just breaking their hearts.
And so how do you rectify that going forward?
Being a better human. Helping, just making a positive impact on everyone around me. I know when I, make a positive impact on people around me, my parents lift and they get happier seeing me do that. So obviously doing that and then getting back in the NRL.
And then you get back in the NRL and you're playing high-level football again and you're good, not just an average player, then the whole Nicarima name goes up. You know, so then you deliver in equal part what Cody's delivered.
Nah, better.
As a player, that's the goal. You should be trying to be better than him and vice versa. But you said earlier on that anyone that talks about Cody says what a great bloke he is.
Yeah.
And if there's two of you in the game, because it's easy for people outside of the NRL just to view all NRL players as rat bags. They're always up to no good because that's who gets the press. But the truth is that sometimes you're just young kids who make too much money early and aren't taught how to manage not just the money but the fame and all the other stuff. And there was definitely some mental health stuff that could have been handled differently at club level, at some level. There needed to be a catch there somewhere. My issue is that with clubs hiring sports psychologists, but they're just there to help you make you better footy players. And I just think I'd be spending more time doing the personal development because, yeah, you can be a good footy player, but if I was a coach, I don't want to hang around people that aren't good people. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So I'd be trying to push you into being better people. So just to finish off this podcast, the young guys and girls, now that there's women's rugby league as well, has become so big. So young guys and girls looking to make it into, you know, the Broncos or any other team and looking to play at top level, messages for them to, one, avoid these sort of traps, and two, just to be better people. What sort of messages would you leave them with?
Obviously just find a good platform around you, support system. But biggest thing that I've learned over this time is work on your mindset. You can always get stronger there. Like, you can always be physically strong and whatnot, but if you're mentally strong, you can push. You'll get that little 1% edge over someone else vying for your position.
Yeah, that's an old saying that I heard years ago, that if you want to be an anomaly, you need to act like one. So if you want to be better than the 99%, then you have to act better than the 99%, which it ties into that.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks, mate.
Easy. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Building Better Humans podcast with your host, Glenn Azar. For feedback, to stay up to date, or go back and find an old episode, head over to 180.net.au.
Yeah, the Building Better Humans Project podcast. Let's go.